Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Some candidates for Florida governor believe criminal justice reform may be a winning strategy at the ballot box.
What I started with is the contention that Florida is a national leader in locking people up.
Also this week, another candidate for governor says more vo-tech training means more high-paying blue-collar jobs. Not every analyst agrees.
There are a lot of factors that can really affect how much you end up getting paid, but right out of college, $28 an hour for a welder seemed a little high.
We'll also find out why, 50 years after the initial founding of the Poor People's Campaign, that effort is being revitalized. And we'll learn about a new invasive plant that's worming its way into the Sunshine State, and how the best way to eradicate that plant may be to sick an invasive beetle on it. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. As races for statewide office heat up, two candidates have found common ground on criminal justice reform. Ryan Daly reports Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Chris King was joined by fellow Dem and Attorney General candidate Sean Shaw in kicking off a tour to roll out King's platform.
Orlando businessman Chris King recently launched a 10-day state tour he dubbed Turning the Tide that he calls a package of big ideas for transforming criminal justice. Things like prison privatization and the death penalty are in his crosshairs as he's traveling the state calling for their elimination. And King says in Pinellas County, where he kicked off the tour, African Americans are 6 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana. King wants to change that.
I called for a legalization of marijuana. After really studying marijuana laws from a criminal justice perspective, it became of great concern to me.
King is not the only Dem in the gubernatorial race who wants to legalize recreational marijuana. Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum have called for the same thing. But King does feel his position on the death penalty sets him apart.
My position on the death penalty is totally ahead of the pack. Both on the Republican side, pretty much everybody on the Republican side would oppose or supports the death penalty. And on the Democratic side, everybody is a little bit squishy on the policy, but is not suggesting that they would do anything to change it.
The majority of King's criminal justice platform is an effort to reverse what he feels is the state's biggest ailment, mass incarceration.
My vision would be to reduce mass incarceration of nonviolent offenders by 50%. Over the next 10 years, 25% over the next 5 years, and reallocate the resources.
Given King's business background, he estimates the economic payoff of reducing prison populations would be huge.
We may experience savings just from that alone of upwards of $500 million a year.
Democratic Representative Sean Shaw was with King for his tour's kickoff. Shaw is in a crowded race for attorney general with a primary opponent and 3 Republicans running against him. Shaw sees the office he's vying for as a way to bring meaningful reform without having to wait for his current peers in the legislature.
It was terribly frustrating. Prior to session starting, we had these bipartisan press conferences and agreements that we were going to do criminal justice reform. I mean, these were Democrats and Republicans. Everyone understood we needed to tackle criminal justice reform. And for nothing to happen other than a study is terribly disappointing, but it is, you know, Tallahassee as usual, unfortunately.
Shaw is referring to a measure passed during this past session, ordering courts, prisons, and other justice system entities to collect data and in turn use it to craft policy. But Shaw sees the move as redundant and asserts existing data is already crystal clear, particularly on things like marijuana arrests.
A lot of our resources are spent dealing with arresting and detention of individuals who are in there for drug possession. And I think we need to reform not only how we deal with the legalization of marijuana, but our sentencing reform holistically.
Shaw's eagerness to bring reform has him questioning the state's current attorney general, Pam Bondi, who recently filed a lawsuit against opioid manufacturers.
The opioid crisis, for example, there was a press conference yesterday where the attorney general said she was putting together a team to sue pharmaceutical companies. She's been in office 8 years. That should have been done a long, long time ago.
Whether King will be the state's next governor or Shaw will be a member of his cabinet is too early to tell. But King certainly hopes to see both happen.
Representative Shaw, who was with me at my first day, and then a day later, I think, came out and supported some of the very same policies that we kicked off, and which would make it certainly very easy to work together in Tallahassee.
In the most recent round of campaign fundraising, Florida Politics is reporting Shaw has significantly outpaced his primary opponent and has more than $300,000 in hand. But a GOP candidate is leading in fundraising overall. And the Tampa Bay Times reports of King's more than $500,000 raised in April, more than $400,000 of that was out of pocket. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
Still in the realm of Florida gubernatorial politics, State Agriculture Commissioner and Republican candidate for governor Adam Putnam is claiming in his push for vocational technical training that welders come out of tech schools making $28 an hour. And his main challenger for the GOP nomination claims that when Putnam was in college, he opposed putting troops on the country's southern border. From member station WUSF in Tampa, Steve Newborn takes a closer look at those claims with PolitiFact Florida's Allison Graves.
The candidates for Florida governor have left the starting gate, and the claims are already starting to muddy up the track. Case in point, Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam is making the rounds of the hustings, promoting his vocational technical plan. During a recent stop in Orlando, he made this point.
Nobody's telling our students that welders are coming out of their tech schools at $28 an hour. They're not telling them that pipe fitters are making six figures while their friends are getting a degree in European art history with $70,000 in student loan debt.
Let's talk about that possibly inflated claim with Allison Graves of PolitiFact Florida. Hey, Allison.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Allison. But something tells me that you're not going to make $28 an hour right out of school, especially with a welding torch in your hand.
Yeah, Putnam's overstating the case here a little bit. We rated this claim half true. It's unlikely someone just starting out as a welder or pipe fitter will make as much as Putnam said. That said, people who work in the industry say it's possible to make that much depending on the industry you choose, the amount of training you get. There are a lot of factors that can really affect how much you end up getting paid. But right out of college, $28 an hour for a welder seemed a little high. We spoke to some industry specialists for welding. They say starting out, you could look to make anywhere from $12 an hour up to $20 an hour. And then if you get additional certifications for welding, like you can get an education certification so you can teach welding to other people. Those are the type of moves that will really get you to that $28 an hour mark. Pipe fitters making six figures. We heard anecdotal evidence that that is the case. People in the industry said, yes, I know tons of people who are pipe fitters making six figures. But once again, it really depends on the industry you're entering into as a pipe fitter, what kind of certification you're getting. You can go to technical school. You can go the union route. So everything considered, we rated this half true.
Going the union route, something tells me that Adam Putnam, who comes from a line of citrus farmers, isn't touting the union line either here.
No, he's really just talking about the kind of 12 to 15 month technical and vocational training you would get.
Bottom line, it takes years to get to that bottom line.
Yeah,
right?
Bottom line is there's an opportunity to make this much, but saying that that would happen right after you leave school is kind of overstating the case.
All right, in keeping with our theme of Adam Putnam, one of his main opponents for governor, Northeast Florida Congressman Ron DeSantis, is saying this about his fellow Republican from Bartow. When he was in the Congress, he opposed putting troops on our southern border using the National Guard. Allison, this is about 10 years ago, and the border situation wasn't as politically volatile as it is now, but does DeSantis have a point here?
He has a point, but he also neglects important context like you just mentioned, so we rated it half true. In 2004, Putnam did vote against an amendment that authorized the Secretary of Defense to assign members of the military under certain circumstances to assist the Department of Homeland Security in securing the border. And that's a mouthful. Basically, Putnam did vote against sending the military to the border. But the claim, what it leaves out, is Putnam's overall support of Trump's immigration policies, as well as the fact that he took several key votes in favor of border security around the same time. So, yes, he voted against this amendment, but if you look to the next month, you'll see that he voted for border security. So, really, in understanding this claim, you have to understand all of Putnam's positions on immigration and border security, not just this one 2004 vote.
All right, Allison Graves of PolitiFact Florida, thanks for helping build a wall to keep out all those bad claims.
Thanks for having me.
That was Steve Newborn from member station WUSF in Tampa, speaking with PolitiFact Florida's Allison Graves. Still to come on Capitol Report, with a new season right around the corner, officials take a look back at the past hurricane season to see what worked and what didn't.
I certainly don't need to tell you all how challenging and how historic of a storm it really was. The uncertainty, the magnitude, the depth, the breadth, the scope of the storm really was something I believe challenged us as Floridians.
Half a century after its original founding, a renewed Poor People's Campaign is again on the march for economic and social justice.
We deal with racism, social injustices. We deal with the way that people are treated based on their gender, sexual preference.
And are invasive air potato plants bugging you? Scientists say the solution may be an actual bug.
They're almost like little heat-seeking missiles.
While hurricane season is only 2 weeks away, Florida is already starting to see tropical depressions and bands of heavy rain across the state. And as Sasha Cordner reports, looking back at the 2017 season, officials want to make sure not only are stakeholders prepared this year, but Florida's citizens as well.
This past hurricane season was one of the most devastating ones, not only in Florida, but the whole nation. Ken Graham is the director of the National Hurricane Center.
So many people across the country were impacted by these storms. Look at this, seventh most active season, most hurricanes since 2005, a record three category four landfalls.
Year after year, Florida emergency management officials as well as other officials warn Floridians to be alert and be prepared. While she is a state representative, Jeanette Nunez of Miami says she was guilty of not doing that.
As a native Floridian, I'm no stranger to hurricanes, but like many in our state, had grown somewhat complacent to the ever-growing warnings that we receive and then certainly seeing hurricanes sort of drift off into the coast.
But after the impact of Hurricanes Hermine, Maria, and Irma in the last couple years, Nunez says she saw the value of being prepared, especially last year with Irma.
So I myself had a tremendous learning experience sitting with so many local emergency managers, mayors, city managers, and folks on the ground. And certainly I met with individuals in Monroe County, in Lee, Collier, Flagler, St. John's. I met with our farmers, our citrus growers. I met with our industries, our stakeholders, with the electric utilities. So it really was a comprehensive approach to educate myself, but also to make sure that we had ample information and that we had the tools necessary to do our job as committee members.
As chair of the House Select Committee on Hurricane Response and Preparedness, Nunez spoke to a group of stakeholders at the 32nd Annual Governor's Hurricane Conference. Her committee held a series of meetings for the 2018 legislative session to assess the role the state played in making sure Floridians were prepared.
Everything from vulnerable populations, evacuations, fuel supplies, debris removal, you name it, we talked about it. And it was a miracle that we were able to get through all of those topics within the time allotted.
Among the top priorities of our committee was trying to address the failures that led up to the 12 nursing home deaths due to a South Florida facility losing power during Hurricane Irma. Nursing homes will now be required to have generators and 72-hour fuel supplies on site by July 1st. It's under a rule issued by Governor Rick Scott, later passed by the Florida legislature and signed into law.
And kudos to the Scott administration for taking decisive action there. The Agency for Healthcare Administration promulgated rules. There was a lot of discussion with the industry stakeholders. And I think ultimately what passed and what was signed into law, we are We are better, our elderly are vulnerable, are safer for it.
While she says there is room for improvement with regard to restoring Florida's electric grid, Nunez says overall the power companies did a good job, and Governor Rick Scott agrees.
One of the things we've tried to do really well here is get our utilities back on. All of our utilities have worked well together, and we got the power back on very rapidly. For anybody that didn't have power in their first week, like my daughter, I'm sure they didn't think it was rapidly enough, but everybody actually did work really well together.
There's also talk of making the process of evacuations a bit smoother, and Governor Rick Scott commissioned Florida's Transportation Agency to do a study.
Yeah, I know FDOT did a study to see if there's ways that we can improve the evacuation, which I think everybody worked hard to make that go as smoothly as possible, but there's always ways to improve.
As for Floridians, they are encouraged to have a plan and stock up on the necessary food and supplies. Hurricane season officially begins June 1st and will end November 30th. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
One 153 years ago this Sunday, President Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation was read aloud in Florida for the first time by Union Brigadier General Edward McCook. That event, which will be reenacted on Sunday, will take place on the steps of the historic Knott House in downtown Tallahassee, the very spot on which the original reading took place. More recently, it's been 50 years since civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. helped organize thousands of people to march in Washington, D.C. to demand higher wages and better living and working conditions. Today, those same issues are once again attracting a multi-ethnic coalition of groups. The renewed Poor People's Campaign launched recently. It's hosting 40 days of action, which kicked off with rallies in 30 state capitals, including Florida's. Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter spoke with the group's faith leader, St. Augustine-based Reverend Rob Rawls, and Lillian Hall, a single mom and fast food worker from Tampa.
Reverend Rawls, thank you so much for joining us here today. And Lillian Hall, thank you as well. I know both of you all are in town today for the Poor People's Campaign. And that was an initiative that was actually started back in the 1960s by Dr. King. And now fast forward, here we are 50-odd years later, and we're seeing sort of the revival of this movement. Why now? What makes now the right time to sort of bring this back?
Well, I think in our country, it's really obvious that the moral narrative has just taken a shift for what I deem to be the worst. And so there seems to be a war on impoverished people, people of color. And I think that and Dr. King, he actually was killed 2 weeks after he started the Poor People's Campaign. And so that tells you that it must have been an extremely important piece as it relates to social justice. For his life to just happen to be taken 2 weeks after he started this initiative. And so I think that the way we are in our country right now, it's time. And in reality, Dr. Barber and Dr. Theo Harris, they've been developing this with a team for the past 3 to 4 years. And now we're finally at our launch after about 3 to 4 years worth of work being put into it.
What are some of the themes that you guys are really focused on this time around?
Definitely dealing with the militarization, a war economy. We look at our police departments now, and it's not the community police officer that we think of with servants to protect. And so we talk about real militarization. And then even when we deal with the gun violence, I mean, we're just in a militarized society. We deal with racism, social injustices. We deal with the way that people are treated based on their gender, sexual preference. And then the idea of people having the right to make a minimum, a living wage. And so you have people that are working full-time jobs and sometimes two jobs But because of this bias towards corporate America, they're being allowed to pay people a wage disenfranchises a whole group of people that are working hard, but still can't even afford to live after working a full-time job. And so there are a lot of different areas that we're dealing with.
And Lillian, talk a little bit about that too, because you work at Taco Bell, you work at Taco Bell in Tampa, and there is a difference between what we say is the minimum wage versus what's actually a living wage.
I am a single parent of four children, and it's very hard for me to live off my wages at Taco Bell. I've been there 2 years, and I'm still at $8.74. That's not going to get it with four children. And I'm dealing with other obstacles that I have to decipher. Do I feed my children? Do I feed myself? Do I pay my bills? And other things that I need to take care of. It's not enough. So I am in this working with this campaign to try to raise the wages to a living wage, not minimum wage, because I can't make it. I can't make ends meet. I can't pay my bills and take care of my family on the wages that I'm getting right now.
Well, to the two of you both, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
That was Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter speaking with Reverend Rob Rawls and Lillian Hall, both connected with the recently relaunched Poor People's Campaign in Florida. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. The fight over what should and should not go into Florida's Constitution continues. Greyhound breeders and trainers are asking the courts to strip a proposed constitutional amendment from the November ballot, alleging that the measure is misleading and inaccurate. The proposal placed on the ballot by the Constitution Revision Commission would outlaw greyhound racing at dog tracks by the year 2020, a process known as decoupling. Tracks would still be allowed to operate other more lucrative gambling, such as machines and poker rooms. In a complaint filed this week in Leon County Circuit Court, lawyers for the plaintiffs raised what they deemed would be numerous flaws in the amendment. The Florida Greyhound Association believes the proposed ballot title and summary don't fully inform voters about the impact of the amendment if approved. But supporters of the amendment, such as the Humane Society of the United States, call the lawsuit a desperate attempt to thwart voters from deciding the fate of greyhound racing. For years, doing away with greyhound racing, which has been part of Florida's gambling footprint for nearly a century, has been heavily lobbied and debated in the legislature. Despite what appeared to be widespread support even among legislative leaders, such proposals have repeatedly failed when prohibiting dog racing becomes entangled with other gambling-related issues. Premiums for health insurance plans sold on the federal marketplace are expected to increase by nearly 17% in Florida next year. That's due to changes in the Affordable Care Act, according to a new analysis that was released today. The Center for American Progress that put out the analysis estimates that a decision by Congress and President Donald Trump to repeal the mandate that people buy health insurance, coupled with proposed changes to the types of policies that can be sold, will increase premiums for Floridians by $1,011. The report by the left-leaning group estimates that the average unsubsidized health insurance premium for a 40-year-old male buying a marketplace policy in 2019 will be $6,995. Finally this week, the air potato vine is an invasive plant taking over much of the state of Florida. But as Regan McCarthy reports, officials are fighting the problem with a tiny red beetle, which they're giving away to residents across the state.
So when you get home, try to take, put them on the vine. I like to be nice and put them on the vine. Okay. So you can give them home, and they'll get, there's 15 in there.
Let's see them. What do they look like?
I got 15. I probably need 4,000.
Spencer Cullen is carrying a clear plastic tub filled with leaves and small red bugs. He's hoping they'll help stop his Leon County yard from being overtaken by air potato vines.
We got a lot of vines out there. They're just starting to come up.
Cullen says he's tried pulling them or digging them up, but Ken Joelli, an extension agent in St. Lucie County, says the plants can be hard to get rid of. They spread through tubers underground as well as through potato-like bulbs, which can drop to the ground and sprout more plants.
Of course, we could use a lot of labor, which costs money for the taxpayers. We could use herbicides to help us control these invasive vines. But anytime we use herbicides, we always have to be considerate of water quality and the non-target impacts.
Joelli says since the plant is invasive, that's another reason it's hard to control. It came from overseas and has no natural predators in Florida. But Joelli says scientists have come up with a solution, air potato leaf beetles.
They're almost like little heat-seeking missiles. Once you release these air potato leaf beetles on your air potato vines, once those air potato vines start to disappear and thin out, the insects fly away and they go and look for other air potato. So it does a really good job for us. Mm-hmm. It's letting nature do some of the work for us.
Air potato leaf beetles aren't native to Florida either. Scientists have brought them from Nepal and are breeding them to use as what's called a biocontrol agent. Carrie Mentier is an assistant professor at the University of Florida. She says before the bugs are released, scientists spend years testing them to ensure they won't become an invasive problem themselves. She says these insects won't eat any other plants.
The only thing they're going to bite is air potato. And one really good thing is Matt says it's extremely effective and all of like the economic benefits that come along with it. But as a biological control practitioner doing things like this, I really like it because it's pretty. These beetles are extremely charismatic. We call them charismatic microfauna because they're non-intimidating. They look just like lady beetles. They squeak, actually. We're trying to get them to squeak earlier, but if you have a couple of them in your hand and give them a little shake, they will squeak. And they're very charismatic, so people aren't afraid of them. And so it's been great to be able to talk to the public about biological control and bring them to get them where they are needed, which is in people's yards and in natural areas in the state.
Air potato vines have large heart-shaped leaves and grow round brown-colored bulbs. If you think you've got one of the plants in your yard, you can order some beetles online from the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agriculture. Your county extension office will have the details. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Regular Capital Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ryan Daly, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Steve Newborn. Technical assistance for Capital Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And please join us each week at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capital Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capital Report online, including archives of past shows, at WFSU.org. Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following: the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.